Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us. I am Michelle Morris from Consolidated Planning Group, and we have another very important, very helpful topic for you today, income tax issues for the Special Needs Trust. Teresa Peruzzo is with us, and she is our tax expert that we refer people to all the time. We don't work together, but you know, we're in the special needs community and we refer our clients to her a lot. Go ahead and put your questions in the chat box. We cannot see you or hear you because we're in webinar mode. So if you have any questions or comments that you would like to ask as we're going through, please go ahead and put them in the chat box. And we will get to as many of your questions as we possibly can. Of course, during the course of the webinar, you will receive Teresa's information and contact info, and you'll have our contact info at Consolidated Planning Group. And you can reach out to either one of us for additional questions or to ask questions in private. We should be here for about an hour today, and we do record all of our webinars. So after today's webinar, you will receive an email that has a link to the recording, plus a copy of all the slides. And if there's anything in the slides that, you know, is a clickable link, of course, you'll be able to click those when you receive them later on. So again, please sit back, relax, enjoy. We can't see you or hear you. Questions in the chat box, and you will receive this information later on today. Really quick, before we get Teresa up here to talk, I want to go over Consolidated Planning Group. Some of you might be listening to us for the first time, and I just want to let you know who we are and why we sponsor these webinars so much. We are located in Sugar Land, Texas, which is just outside of Houston, and we serve families all across Texas and all across the United States. We are financial advisors who focus on helping families with an individual or a loved one who has some kind of intellectual or developmental disability. We have over 30 years of experience with insurance and financial services. We do this full time. We live, eat, sleep, breathe this stuff. We are members of the Special Needs Planning Academy, and we are nationally certified as Social Security advisors. And one of the main things for you to remember is that the owner of our company has two special needs kids. And that's why we do what we do. You know, she knows exactly how hard it is, and all of us know exactly how hard it is and what you're going through. And we've lived the life. We don't just spout it. We actually live it. So we understand what you're going through, and we are here to help try to make things easier on you than they were for us. So families come to us for plans to ensure that their family is protected financially. So what if, you know, the main breadwinner in your family becomes ill or disabled and can't work, or if they pass away too early, or even if they live too long? Lifetime care plans for your loved one. How are they going to be taken care of once you're gone? And how much is that going to cost? And then how can you ensure that you leave that money to them? For example, in a trust, like we're going to talk about today, in such a way that it will not jeopardize their other benefits. We do a lot of transition planning for families. You know, that magical moment when your child turns from a minor to an adult in the eyes of the law, a lot changes. And as they transition out of high school into the real world, there's a lot that goes on that you need to know about. We can help set up ABLE accounts and life insurance and investments, help with your retirement planning and the future cost of care for your loved one. We help families understand all of these legal aspects that they need to have in place. And being able to protect them. We are also here to advocate for you and to educate you on all of these topics and why it's so important to plan ahead. You know, there are over 263,000 financial advisors across the United States. And it's kind of a scary statistic, but out of those 263,000 financial advisors, fewer than 200 of them focus on special needs planning. That's less than a tenth of a percentage of all the financial advisors in the United States who do what we do. And so it's really important that you're with an expert when you are doing these kinds of things. You know, you wouldn't use a real estate attorney to help you do guardianship for your child or a divorce attorney. You have to have the right kind of expert to help you. And if you're here and you have a loved one with some sort of special need or disability, then you're in the right place. So thank you for joining us. So today we have Teresa Ferruzzo. She is a CPA. She is fantastic. We refer many clients to her and have never heard a bad word from any of them about her. She's located in Houston and specializes in bookkeeping services, tax preparation services for business and individuals, and trust taxations. And she emphasizes in that special needs trust, which we're going to be talking about mostly today. And like I said, hopefully answering your questions and comments as they come through the chat. So, Teresa, and her email is teresa@tferruzzo, that's Ferruzzo, cpa.com, tferruzzocpa.com. Go ahead, Teresa.
Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. Good to see or talk to all. Most of you may have been at the presentation that was done in December. If not, I'm glad you're here today. A lot of this we did go over then, but we added a few extra slides for our talk today. If there are any questions I cannot answer, please feel free to email me at the email address given to you, and I will be happy to research questions and answer any that I may not know off the top of my head today. I do know there are a lot of topics when it comes to special needs trust, as it's always surrounding the benefits and not besting the benefits for our special needs adults and children. So I will get started. Today we're talking about why you should consider a special needs trust to meet your financial needs and avoid affecting the government benefits that we work so hard to apply for and maintain. There are tax concerns. We're going to talk about tax concerns as they relate to special needs trusts, the two types of special needs trusts, the tax implications from an income, gift, and estate tax point of view. There are two primary special needs trust types that we're going to talk about today, the first of which is first party, which is also called the self-settled special needs trust. And the third party trust, which is where you can do a lot of tax planning centered around to avoid paying lots of taxes at the trust level. So some of the key differences between the two are the trust maker for the first party trust can be a beneficiary, a parent, a grandparent, a guardian, or the court. For third party, it is anyone other than the beneficiary, which in this case we're talking today is our special needs dependent. The beneficiary of the first party trust is anyone that is disabled that is under 65. The beneficiary for third party special needs trust, there are no restrictions. The funding source, as we mentioned before, for first party, the funding source are funds coming from the beneficiary themselves. Perhaps they have a settlement from an accident that funded the trust to begin with. For third party, it's anyone funding it other than the beneficiary, for instance, a parent or parents who pass away and perhaps they had a second to die policy that funds it, or a grandparent funds it upon their death. The remainder, once the special needs trusts are coming to an end, the remainder, the first party does have a Medicaid payback provision, and that is where the funds that are left in that trust will have to go back and pay for any expenses that were covered with Medicaid benefits. For third party, that is not a requirement. There is no Medicaid payback provision. Distributions out of the first party trust are only for the benefit of the beneficiary. For third party trust, you can distribute to the primary, and then you can also have secondary beneficiaries once your primary beneficiary passes away. Revocability, first party trusts are always irrevocable, and third party trusts can be irrevocable or revocable. Tax treatment, which is what we'll primarily be talking about today, is first party or self-settled trusts are always treated as a grantor trust, which grantor trusts by nature always will go on the individual tax return of the beneficiary of that trust. For third party, it can be either treated as a grantor trust or a irrevocable complex trust. And basically, for the grantor trust, that comes into play when the grantor is the person creating or funding the trust. If they have the right to certain powers and authorities to trigger the grantor status for third party. As we mentioned before, there's two types of special needs trusts. First party means the disabled individual uses their own assets to fund the trust. And then third party means someone else establishes the trust for the disabled person as the beneficiary with their funds. The form that you will file for a third-party special needs trust is called Form 1041. And similar to a 1040, which you do for your individual tax return, the 1041 is what's used by the IRS to account for income that has been earned using the EIN number of the special needs trust. This is how you report it to the IRS on an annual basis. It does have, I will say, there's a filing requirement for the 1041 if there is taxable income into the trust reported on something like maybe a 1099 from a brokerage house, such as Consolidated Planning Group. They will report that money, interest or dividends, to the IRS using the EIN of the trust. Then that will need to be reported on a Form 1041. Anything $600 or more is the filing requirement. One thing to point out, there is a difference between benefit income and taxable income as it comes, as it is defined by IRS versus when you're talking to a Social Security worker or Medicaid type worker. And taxable income in the eyes of the IRS is created when there's a distribution made directly out of the special needs trust that was either to or for the benefit of the beneficiary. Benefit income is where Social Security and Medicaid workers call benefit income is when income is in the form of cash. Like, for instance, if you pay $1,000 to a disabled adult, that $1,000 to them is considered benefit income. And anything that can be used for food or shelter is also deemed income, benefit income, in the eyes of Social Security and Medicaid workers. Whereas on the IRS taxable income side, that is not considered taxable income. So it's a very different concept when you're looking at it in two different ways, which is confusing a lot of times because you would think that benefit income would be the same as taxable income, but it's not. And their definitions are completely different as well.
That makes no sense, but we'll get it figured out. I think there's one question here that does apply to what you're talking about right now. The first party trust, can that be filed with the individual tax form?
Yes, it will
Yeah.
go on the individual tax form. It is
And so you
considered a
would use.
grantor trust, and I've seen it two ways. In some cases, the first party special needs trust would have received a tax identifying number. And if you do want to report it on a 1041, you can do what's called a grantor type tax return, where in essence, all of the income will just be reported to you with a grantor letter, basically. And then the grantor letter is what's used to put on your 1040. But yes, at the end of the day, everything goes on your individual tax return.
Okay, fantastic. And I know that there are more questions out there, but we will get to those, I promise. I just want to kind of try to keep it on topic as we're going through.
Okay. All right. Third party trust. Okay, this is where the trust is created by a third party for the benefit of someone other than the grantor. In this case, the trust will be a separate taxpayer. The trust will have its own taxpayer identification number, which is called the employer identification number or EIN, and it does have a required annual federal income tax return, which is the Form 1041 I mentioned earlier. And if you're in a state that has state filing requirements, Texas does not, but certain states do have state tax requirements. You also have to file a state fiduciary income tax return. And one more on that slide before Michelle. To the extent that distributions have been made to the beneficiary, even if in kind, the trust itself tax return, the 1041, will carry out the income, which means the beneficiary, which is the disabled adult or child, will get a K-1. And then the K-1 is what goes on the 1040 tax return. It carries the income out of the trust to the beneficiary. Okay, so we're talking up here about third party special needs trust. And basically, the third party special needs trust can be classified as a grantor trust, it can be classified as a complex trust, or it can be classified as a qualified disability trust. And you hope that it is meeting the definitions to be a qualified disability trust. Reason being is, if the trust qualifies for this, it is allowed to take a $5,050 exemption, meaning the trust itself can have income of $5,050 before it would even be considered to have to pay a dollar in taxes. Whereas a complex trust exemption is only $100. So, say you earned $5,000 of interest and dividends for the year, you would be paying, for a complex trust, $5,000 minus $100. So you'd have to pay taxes on $4,900. Whereas if it was a qualified disability trust, you would get to exempt that income using that $5,050 exemption on Form 1041.
If you use 1041, you have to use the EIN, or it doesn't matter if you use Social Security number or EIN.
Has to use EIN.
So if you file this under your own, if the first party trust under your own, then you would use Social Security. And if you use a 1041, you would use EIN.
Correct.
Perfect. Okay.
And this kind of spells out how the third party special needs trust becomes eligible to be a qualified disability trust, which is the goal of how you want this to be handled. It's the best tax-wise, for your loved one. And basically, the trust must be irrevocable. It must be established for the sole benefit of the disabled beneficiary. The disabled beneficiary must be under the age of 65 at the time the trust is established. The beneficiary must have a disability that is included in the definition of disabled pursuant to the Social Security Act. The trust must be a third-party trust. It cannot be funded any time by the disabled beneficiary or with his or her own money. If the person funding the trust during his or her lifetime is also serving as the trustee, qualified disability trust status may not be attainable. Most special needs trusts are funded by parents and are set up as irrevocable trusts for the benefit of their children. So most of these that I do see and work with are eligible and considered qualified disability trusts, which are allowed the $5,000 exemption.
What if a parent sets up a special needs trust and then the child, it turns out, can work and can support themselves and is not qualified as having a disability in the eyes of Social Security? Can they just, what do they do then?
Well, typically, the special needs trusts are not funded yet.
Typically, but sometimes.
Well, I would, if they're funded and it's a special needs trust, and they're able to work, then I'm not sure what you do. I don't know if how much you probably have to contact the attorney and then see how we can undo the special needs trust. Or it may be that the funds sit there and just you might need them one day.
Okay.
I don't know. I've not run across that. Most of the time,
okay,
the special needs clients I have are not they're not able to be gainfully employed at all. It's never going to change. Like they were born that way.
Right.
Most of the time, I have seen some that are very high functioning where they are working currently, but the special needs trust is still sitting there because how they're working currently to earn the money is they have kind of a lot of coaching going on currently, and they have a lot of parent support. The parent might be helping them at the job. And then later on, when the parents pass away, it may be that that loved one cannot keep up with that level of income. So then you can always fall back on it, depending on the diagnosis. So it'll be case by case basis. And there are huge differences in the tax rates between a trust and an individual, meaning when you're filing a trust tax return, which is the Form 1041, your trust tax rate is at 37% right when the income in the trust is over $15,200. Whereas on the 1040, which is your individual tax return, you won't get to the 37% tax bracket until your income is over $609,000. So this just shows you with these percentages on how you do not want income to accumulate. It can accumulate in the trust, but you have to have special planning to get that income distributed out to the individual at the 1040 level, because you pay 37% of 15,200 versus it takes you to get to 600,000 before you get to the 37% bracket at the 1040 level. So that's where very careful tax planning comes into play throughout the year once that special needs trust is funded and earning a significant amount of money. What is a K-1 and when is it issued? So a K-1 is the form that gets generated when you file your Form 1041 for your special needs trust. And let's just say the 1041, let's just say the trust earned $5,000 in dividend income. Well, during the year, if that trust made any distributions or paid for a medical bill or paid for a vacation on behalf of the beneficiary or funded an ABLE account on behalf of the beneficiary, then what happens is the K-1 is the form that gets issued to the individual beneficiary that will go on their 1040 tax return. And it basically, say you paid $5,000 to the ABLE account, then that $5,000 that was earned at the 1041 level actually gets passed to the beneficiary on a K-1 that's reported on their 1040. Therefore, the trust doesn't pick up the taxable income. It gets passed to the 1040 for the individual to put on their tax return. How does a beneficiary receive funds out of the special needs trust? Okay, so you have to be super careful when it comes to someone on SSI and benefits. So you don't want that person to be given cash or distributed cash outright out of the special needs trust, because that can affect benefits. So what you can do is the trust itself can purchase the necessities for the beneficiary out of the trust itself. It can pay medical bills, it can pay for trips, but you would want to pay the third party provider directly and not have it flow through the beneficiary's bank account. Let's see. Yep, you can purchase healthcare products, supplies. You don't want to pay for room and board out of the special needs trust. On the next slide, I have a list of things that you can actually pay for out of the special needs trust that is not considered room and board, which will not interfere with SSI benefits. But again, you would want to pay these directly out of the trust funds to the individual vendors in this case, and not straight to the beneficiary.
Leslie, is this, Leslie is asking, Teresa, if this is the same if the person is getting SSDI, not SSI.
SSDI.
SSDI would be the parent is drawing from their Social Security, and so the disabled child gets a benefit based on the parent's record.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have RSD and SSDI, right?
Right. So they wouldn't need to follow all the qualifications of SSI anymore. One thing that you do want to watch out for, though, is that you still are able to qualify for Medicaid.
Right.
And there are still income and asset limits to Medicaid.
Yeah, it's 2,000. So yeah, I would still be careful and follow through with these rules so that if they need Medicaid, that they are not interfering, or they need to apply for Medicaid within the next 5 years, you know, or the look back period, that they're not interfering with it.
Perfect. Thank you so much. And this list will be available to all of you. There's a question in the chat. Can I get a copy of this list? We will send you all of these slides and a copy of the webinar later on today to your email. So as long as you gave us a real email when you registered for this, you will receive it today.
One way, so when you're doing tax planning with the special needs, third-party special needs trust, and your income level is starting to get up there at the trust level, and you want to try to avoid paying the high trust tax rates at that 37%, it can quickly get to the 37%. And let's just say you are trying to find something to pay for your beneficiary to distribute money to them so that the K-1 will go on their 1040 tax return. Maybe you've already paid for the vacation and you still need to get additional funds out of the trust because you want it to pass to the 1040 tax rate level on their 1040 tax return. You can fund an ABLE account using the special needs trust as well, up to $18,000. So it follows the gift tax exemption amount. So for 2024, it's $18,000. I'm sure a lot of you have heard about the ABLE account. I kind of put a definition in here. It's a tax favored vehicle similar to a 529 college savings plan. Some states even allow you to have a deduction for 529, and I think it goes hand in hand with ABLE accounts. It depends on the states. Texas does not. There are strict rules on who qualifies for an ABLE. You must have a disability that began before age 26 and or be a recipient of supplemental security income. The ABLE account will not be counted as an asset against, or it won't cause a threat to your SSI benefits. And there is also, let's see, go to the next slide for me, Michelle.
There you go.
Here we go. There is, so if your disabled adult is actually working, you can, they are allowed to actually contribute money into their own ABLE account as well, which is a nice benefit. And that account does grow tax deferred. There is a limit you want to make sure you know, that it cannot exceed $100,000 ever. If you're on SSI, the SSI will be suspended. And then the it does have, it is subject to Medicaid payback as well. The ABLE accounts are. 2025, your limit goes up to 19,000.
I'm glad they're doing that, but they're keeping the 100,000 topper.
Yes, they are.
Okay.
That hasn't changed yet, but it might. Here are some ideas on if you do have a special needs trust that's already funded for your loved one and you are worried about the large trust tax rates. What you'll want to do is contact your CPA, or if you're handling your tax return, make sure you run the numbers, possibly in the tax program, and come up with a good tax estimate to know how much in distributions do you need to take out of the trust, meaning what do you need to pay for out of the trust for the benefit of your special needs adult. And then that way you can push a lot of the income through to the beneficiary in the form of the K-1, which ends up putting the income at the 1040 level. Let's see. Yeah, you have to kind of play with the numbers, because at the 1040 level, you can also get yourself into trouble as well if it starts. So the first 25,000 for SSI at the individual tax return level is not taxed. But then once you go over that, your income exceeds that, it starts being taxed. But overall, because trust tax rates are so high, it's super important to make distributions throughout the year, visit it a couple times a year, especially if a big taxable event happens at the trust level, like a big capital gain, or it got funded this year, you have a big distribution from a retirement plan. All of it should be addressed and kind of looked at so that you decrease your tax liability as much as possible. You have to look at both the special needs trust and the individual tax return. Okay, so there are some, I did want to mention at the individual tax return level, there are some deductions that some of you may or may not know about. You can deduct medical expenses that would go on form Schedule A, which is a miscellaneous itemized deduction. It is subject to getting no benefit until the expenses exceed 7.5% of your adjusted gross income. Those medical expenses can also include home modifications, if you have to go to conferences and seminars, special schooling. My daughter attends a special school program, and the majority of her day is therapeutic and social skills and nature, and just how to make eye contact and how to properly respond to adults and peers. So you are able to write that off. And then there is also, if she goes to summer camp camps in the summertime, I treat that on our tax return as dependent care, because it's more of a fun-based camp and not so much a medical therapeutic environment. So We do both. We write off the medical expense side, and we also do the child independent care. Overnight camps do not count, though. She's actually at camp for all this week, and I can't write that off. But
That's so much
those are
easier.
just some things that you might keep in mind at your individual tax return level to help you cut down on your taxes if they're still a dependent on your tax return.
So we've gotten a couple of questions that are similar here in the chat box. So I would like to just quickly address it. People, after you have switched, if your child has switched from SSI to SSDI, now you don't have to follow all the same rules that SSI has because you're not relying on SSI anymore. So now you could use your special needs trust to pay for housing and food and utilities without having a deduction to your SSI because you don't get SSI anymore. But what about the ABLE account limit of $100,000? I don't think that that account limit would really matter anymore if they're not on SSI. However, you don't want to have that much money in there because there is that Medicaid payback to it. And if your loved one passes away with a lot of money in that account, Medicaid can come claim reimbursement. So it's much better to keep the money in a third party special needs trust. Teresa, do you have any comments on that? That's what I'm thinking.
No, I agree. Yeah, it's just another, you can make it so complicated for yourself because you want to make sure that you're spending the money. You ask yourself, should we be spending the money out of the special needs trust or should we be spending the money out of the ABLE account? So if the ABLE account gets too high and you're wanting to do tax planning at the special needs trust level, then you're probably going to want to take the money out of the special needs trust to pay for, large medical expenses versus pulling it out of the ABLE account. So it just gets things super complicated. I mean, I do agree that it's a good avenue that it grows tax-free, but I am not a big believer in funding it for high dollar amount. It's just another thing to have to worry about spending down, and then you can lose it at the end if you aren't using the funds. It's just another avenue that you should use those funds as much as possible for your loved one. That way, it avoids having to do any Medicaid payback.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
Okay, I get this question a lot. And it's, can I claim my disabled adult as a dependent? And one thing I found super interesting is that if your dependent can actually live outside of your home, not within your home, but their gross income can exceed 5,500. That's in 2024 to adjust each year for inflation. And he or she cannot provide more than half of their own annual support and must be permanently and totally disabled. And part of the thing you have to look at for half of their annual support are the benefits they're receiving. If those benefits are large enough to pay for half of their own annual support, you have to kind of keep those numbers in mind and make sure that they do qualify. But most of the time, the disabled adults are still considered dependents on the parent's tax return in a lot of the cases. Again, it's a case-by-case basis, but don't think that just because they've reached a certain age that they can't be claimed as your dependent. Okay, let's talk a little bit about gift tax. So, what is the gift tax? The IRS assesses taxes on gifts that people make during their lifetime. This gift amount is also changes each year for inflation. Right now, it's at $18,000. So typically, you can gift someone $18,000 and not have to do anything. You don't have to file with the IRS. You don't have to report it anywhere. You can just gift the amount to your loved one. Let's see. We will go to the next slide, Michelle. There is a problem, though, with gifting to a third-party special needs trust. So because a special needs trust is not a person, it is not considered a completed gift. The beneficiary is not allowed to manage the funds in this trust at all. They have no rights to do anything with this money. So any amounts of money that's gifted directly to a third-party special needs trust, even though it's below the $18,000, you still are required to file a gift tax return. A lot of people don't realize that. And it also counts against your estate tax exemption if you have a large estate tax that's meeting the threshold there. One way you can gift, we'll talk about on the next slide, is if you have a grandparent that would like to gift to your special needs adult or child, you can gift to their ABLE account without impacting government benefits. And it also is considered a true gift, and then there's no reporting to the IRS, and it doesn't count against your estate tax exemption. So if you want to gift someone, or if a grandparent's asking to gift some money, have them gift it to the ABLE account and not directly into the special needs trust. Okay, so now we are talking about filing your special needs trust tax return, third-party special needs trust, your Form 1041. There are some deductions that you can take at the special needs trust level. Remember, you have the $5,050 exemption, which you can take against income. You can also write off legal and advocacy fees, trustee and fiduciary fees, management expenses, tax preparation fees. I didn't list that one here, but that's also allowed to be deducted. And first party trust income. So first party, this is third party trust deductions. First party trust goes on your personal 1040 tax return, and none of these expenses are actually allowed to be deducted currently in current tax law.
Is a gift to the special needs trust considered income to that trust?
No, it is not.
Okay.
Only earning. So let's just say the gift was made into the special needs trust, which if that then is invested, let's just say it's invested in something and it earned $1,000 in interest, that $1,000 is what's taxed to the trust, not the gift itself.
Okay, fantastic. We do have a lot of questions to get to in the chat box. After you go through this, I'll start hitting you with those.
Okay, good. So some key takeaways that we had just listed out for you all to keep in mind is a well thought out distribution plan, meaning what I'd mentioned before is that if the special needs trust is actually funded and is earning interest and dividends, and you're starting to see that you're going to maybe need to pay tax at that high tax rate and at the trust level, you want to start planning what I call a distribution plan, meaning you pay for some things out of the trust for the benefit of the beneficiary, which will then take that income that would have been taxed at the higher tax rates and push it to the beneficiary's 1040 tax return, which is at a much lower tax rate. Beneficiaries that have really high medical expenses, and you see that that is going to be a consistent thing for your special needs adult or child, you can designate a qualified retirement plan to that special needs trust. And because you know you're going to carry out that income because you're going to be paying out the medical expenses, so that would push their taxable income out of the special needs trust 1041 tax return into the 1040 tax return. Make sure you inform your grandparents, friends, and family that your loved one cannot have money in their name, cannot have any assets in their name, and that their will should specify if they want to give anything to your loved one to name the special needs trust. So put everything in the special needs trust, not in their individual name. And then it's important to meet with a professional that will help you in projecting the longevity of the special needs trust as well, to make sure that your loved one's taken care of for years to come, you know, over their life expectancy, past your life expectancy. So there's a big line on how much you want to take out of the special needs trust, as well as how it pertains to tax savings as well. So lots of things to think about that can get complicated. So it's really good to have professionals on your side, both that understand it from an investment point of view and that can run numbers to make sure that the present value is going to be what you want it to be in the future, as well as having a CPA that can help you navigate when to take distributions and when not to take distributions.
Yeah, Teresa, we make a really good team, don't we? Working on each side of that equation, we can certainly help you figure out the future cost of care for your loved one. And thinking about, you know, we kind of run the numbers. We think that while you are alive, it's kind of a budget item for the parent to take care of their loved one. But then once the parent is gone and cannot help provide for that loved one anymore, that's when we look at that special needs trust and the future cost of care estimate and thinking about from the time the parent passes away to the time that child is going to pass away, how much money do you need to fill that care requirement? And that's what we can help with, is figuring out how much money needs to go into that special needs trust to be sure that they are taken care of.
That's right. And it is important also to make sure your beneficiary designations are properly stated as well.
Absolutely.
On the parents' assets, like especially retirement plans and your bank accounts. And make sure you understand that it's detrimental for your loved one if you have their name actually listed as the beneficiary. So you have to make sure all of your assets that you currently have correct beneficiary designations on them.
Exactly, exactly. I'm going to leave this slide up for a few seconds so that people can write down your contact information while I go through some questions. And then I'm going to start scrolling through my slides. I may or may not talk about them. Sometimes I just would rather make sure people get their questions answered. And again, if you have questions that you don't want to ask in public, or you want additional help from Teresa, please reach out to her. Okay, so can a beneficiary, one beneficiary, have more than one trust, and would they have the same EIN number?
Yes, you can have more than one trust, and it would depend on the trust type. So if it's more of a grantor type trust, that would pass anyway. The income passes anyway through the social security number of the beneficiary. So I would think that multiple trusts, if they were grantor trusts, would just be reported at the 1040 level. It would be a first party type of trust. Whereas if it's a third party trust, you would need individual EIN numbers for each of the trust.
Okay. That's perfect, because you answered the next question too. Can I use a trust bank account for one trust from one trust to pay the bill for another trust for the same beneficiary?
Okay, so you're trying to pay a bill out of one trust for the beneficiary. So read that question
another
one more
trust
time.
I think that's what she's saying. Can you use one trust to pay a bill from another?
from another trust, meaning maybe they're trying to pay like a CPA tax preparer bill or something from one trust to from another. I'd probably pay it if you're if you have two separate trusts, and I'm not sure if they're first party or third party. First party trust, if let's just say you're trying to pay a CPA bill or something, first party trust should pay their CPA bill out of the first party trust, because you're not even allowed a deduction for that. But third party trust, you have several deductions you can take on the 1041 that you can't take at the 1040 level. So I would try to stick with paying bills out of the right trust, as they relate to the work that's being done maybe by a professional in that trust. I'm not sure I understand the full question, but I'm hoping that helps.
Yeah. And I did see one question that said, can you be our CPA? And I want to say definitely yes. I feel, you know, people have a lot of questions about this, and you are a superhero in the community. So we really appreciate you coming on here. So
thank you. And I don't know everything, just so everybody knows, but I will definitely research and ask. I have several contacts in the special needs community, and my daughter's special needs, she just turned 21 in April. So I kind of live and breathe this.
Can you talk a little bit about disabled adult child benefits, which is SSDI, also called RSDI, also called childhood disability benefits? Basically, what that is for the audience is where the child is drawing benefits from the parent's Social Security work record. Once you turn on your Social Security, your child will switch from SSI to SSDI, or one of the other names it's called. How are the taxes handled on that? Is that money taxed to the child? Do they have to pay an income tax?
So what you do is you will have to look at the entire child's taxable income for the year. So if it's just a 1099 from, let's just say it's under 25,000, and it's a 1099 for SSI or these other benefits that you have, they may not necessarily have a filing requirement. It also depends on whether they're considered a dependent on your tax return or whether they're on their own for their taxes. So the best thing to do is go ahead and just give all the tax documents, because what if they did earn income and they got a K-1 from a 1041? But typically, what I've seen on all the tax returns I've been dealing with is the government benefits aren't even high enough to really even be considered taxable. So most of them do not have a tax filing requirement. Those that do that I work on are mainly because the special needs trust has already been funded, and we're distributing income out of the special needs trust at a higher level to them at the 1040 level. But for the most part, the majority of my clients have been still listed as dependents on their parents' return. They may be getting one of the government benefits, and it just hasn't been high enough to meet the threshold to even generate tax return at all. Zero tax has been due. So it just all depends. I would just definitely hand over the 1099s that you get for the year to the tax preparer when you do your tax return and have them analyze it for you.
Perfect. So one thing that we always say at Consolidated Planning Group is that the time to start planning for your child's future is right now. It doesn't matter how old they are, whether they're an infant or a toddler or a teen or an adult, now is the time to start planning. The sooner you start, the more of an impact you can have by making small changes over time and not have to do everything all at once. So it's easier on you. It will help you sleep better at night when you've already put thought into things like, who is going to take care of my child once I'm gone, and how is that going to work? Definitely think about what's going to happen after high school. There are vocational options, recreational options, communities that they can live in, and educational options. Different colleges offer great programs. So check into those and tour those programs, tour the colleges, the living communities, all of those places, because if they have a wait list, you want to know about that ahead of time. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, you don't want your child to graduate from high school and spend the rest of their life sitting on your couch playing video games, right? So it's important to think ahead about those things and make careful considerations before you just assume that a sibling is going to be willing or able to step up and care for your loved one. Caregiving is really hard, as you know, and maybe the sibling just isn't cut out for it or isn't ready for it or doesn't want to take that big bite of responsibility. Maybe your individual with the disability would feel some resentment if a sibling tries to step into the role of parent too. That's something else that you need to be careful of. Mm-hmm. So just keep those things in mind. I mean, in the best of all worlds, that would always happen, but it's just not always realistic. I do see a question here in the chat box. Can child support fund a trust? And can you walk me through the process? Well, Teresa, child support beyond age 18 should go into a first party special needs trust,
that's their right? Money. Yes, correct.
It's their money. And then if child support is a thing in your life, it does need to go into that first party trust, or else it will be counted as income to the child. Mm-hmm. And they could lose out on some SSI benefits.
That's right.
Now, if the child is under 18, that doesn't really matter, right?
That's right.
Okay. Yes, a lawyer is required to set up special needs trusts. Mm-hmm. Consolidated Planning Group can set up ABLE accounts, or you can go online and do it if you don't want help. That is fine. Okay, here's a good one. We have a special needs trust for our son, second to die policy, SSI, all of that stuff. He is currently in Section 8 housing, but we have a house that we're considering giving to him, a rental house. So how does that affect taxes if the parents give the child a home?
So you'd be giving it, I'm assuming, not to him because he can't own assets. So you would be gifting it to the third party special needs trust is what it sounds like to me.
Mm-hmm.
So then they would just need to file their gift tax return and report it. And it would just be gifted into the special needs trust and the deed. They have to have an attorney and change the deed into the special needs trust name. So then it becomes an asset of the special needs trust. And then if they are planning to use that house, I've seen this happen with some of my clients as kind of like a group home and rent is being collected on it or paid on it, then that would all be reported at the special needs trust level.
Okay, fantastic. I just want to mention that we do offer a free consultation at Consolidated Planning Group to help answer these questions. And yes, we do keep a list of attorneys that focus on special needs topics who could help you with a power of attorney, guardianship, your wills, and setting up a special needs trust. We keep this list. We generally give it when people are our clients. But I would think as long as you go ahead and at least schedule your free consultation with us, I would be willing to give that list to you if you're interested in that. We're not just going to send it out to everybody willy-nilly because it's something that we take time and effort in making. But as long as you schedule a consultation, these are typically over Zoom. They take about 30 minutes, depending on how many questions you have. And we are happy to answer those questions. You can pick the brains of some special needs focused advisors. Let's see.
Michelle, could I get I don't know if y'all keep the list of questions, if that's stored anywhere, but it'd be good to know just so I can add it to future presentations. I'd love to know kind of what they're all kind of, if there's like general questions that is asked multiple times that I could make sure I address in the next one.
Okay. Yeah. I just saved the list. So we'll try to get as many of these done still. Are capital gains at the trust level still taxed at 37% or capital gains rate?
It's at the capital gains rate.
Okay. We got that one.
But I will say the capital gains rate in a trust, it gets to the highest 20% tax rate. If it's long-term capital gain, it gets to the 20% quicker than at the 1040 level, just like that 37% slide that I showed you earlier, if that makes sense. Everything goes, the income level gets quicker at the trust level to where it gets to the 20% faster than at the 1040 level.
Okay, so we said don't gift to the special needs trust, but then we also said you can leave things to the special needs trust, or he can gift the house to the special needs trust. What's the difference?
You can gift to the special needs trust. It's just that if you have to report it, so you can't take advantage of that annual $18,000 exclusion. But you can absolutely put things in the special needs trust and file a gift tax return. It's just you don't get the $18,000 exemption of not having to do anything when you fund to a special needs trust.
Okay. When parents die and a second to die policy funds the third party trust, is that taxable? No, life insurance passes tax free to heirs, right? Let's see. We got that one. If a child is in Section 8 housing, the organization funding the housing requires income information every year. So we file a 1040 every year, although it's not required by the IRS. Oh, okay.
No, that's fine.
Yeah, that sounds good. Okay, perfect. We are so out of time for today. I really appreciate all of you for being here with us and asking such fantastic questions. Again, if you have a question that you didn't get answered, because I'm sure I probably accidentally missed some, feel free to reach out to me or to Teresa personally. You have all of our contact info. You will receive these slides later on today in your email. And if there's anything else we can do for you, we are very, very happy to help. So thank you very much for sticking with us. And I hope that you all have a fantastic week. Thank you, Teresa, for presenting for us and for sharing your time with us today.
Sure. Thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.